Part 3, Chapter 3. Turl had had no sleep and two fights already today, and he was in no mood for a third. The snow was drifting down on a gray-white day, covering the half-wrecked, small-bladed vehicle, deepening on the broad expanse beyond the zoo. The man-thing looked utterly ridiculous in the huge cyclo seat. Turl snorted. The first fight had been over the uniform requisition. The clothing shop foreman, a mangy half-wit named Druck, had maintained that the requisition was forged. He had even said that, knowing Turl, he did not doubt it, and he had had the effrontery to verify it with an administrator. Then Druck had said he didn't have any uniforms that size, and he wasn't in the habit of outfitting midgets, and neither was the company. Cloth, yes, he had cloth, but it was executive cloth. Then the animal had spoken up and said that under no circumstances would it wear purple. Turl had batted it, but it got up and said the same thing again. Leverage, leverage, damn not having leverage on this animal. But Turl had had an inspiration and had gone out to the old Chinko quarters and found a bale of the blue stuff the Chinkos had once worn. The tailor said it was trash, but he could think of no more arguments. It had taken an hour to hack out and fuse together two uniforms for the man-thing. And then it had refused to wear a regulation company buckle on the belt. Almost had a fit, in fact. Turl had had to go back to the Chinko quarters and dig around until he found what must have been an artifact. A small gold military buckle with an eagle and arrows on it. At least that made an impression on the man-thing. Its eyes had just about popped out. The second fight had been with Zit. First, Zit wouldn't talk at all. Then he finally condescended to look at the requisition. He pointed out that there were no registration numbers in the blanks provided, and maintained that this authorized him to provide anything he cared to, at his own discretion. He said Turl could have the wrecked bladed vehicle. It was a write-off, but it still ran. That was what had brought on the actual blows. Turl had hit Zit hard, and they had gone around and around for almost 5 minutes, blow and counter-blow. Turl had finally tripped over a tool dolly and gotten himself kicked. He had taken the wrecked-bladed vehicle. He had to walk beside it, running it, to get it out through the garage atmosphere port. He now had the animal on it, and it looked like another fight.
"What's this green stuff all over the seat and floor?"
said Johnny. The gently falling snow was covering it, but it turned patches of the snow pale green as it dissolved. At first, Turl wasn't going to answer. Then his sadistic streak got the better of him.
"That's blood."
"It isn't red."
"Cyclo blood isn't red. It's real blood, and it's a proper color. Green. Now shut up, animal. I'm going to tell you how."
"What's all this charred stuff around the edges of this big circle?"
And Johnny pointed to the edges where the canopy had once been. Turl hit him. Johnny almost flew off the huge high seat where he had been standing. But with some agility, he caught hold of a roll bar and didn't fall.
"I have to know,"
said Johnny when he caught his breath.
"How can I be sure somebody didn't press the wrong button and blow this thing up?"
Turl sighed. The arms of the man-thing weren't long enough to reach the controls, and he'd have to stand up on the floor plates to run it.
"They didn't push any wrong button. It just blew up."
"But how? Something must have made it blow up."
Then he realized that this was the vehicle that had killed a cyclo down on the landing field. He himself had heard it explode. Johnny pushed away some snow and sat down on the seat and looked the other way.
"All right,"
snarled Turl.
"When these vehicles are run by cyclo operators, they have a transparent hood over them. That is needed for breathe gas. You won't be using any canopy or breathe gas, animal, so it won't blow up."
"Yes, but why did it blow up? I have to know if I'm going to run the thing."
Turl sighed, long and shudderingly. Exasperation made his fangs grate. The animal was sitting there looking the other way.
breathe gas was under the canopy. They were loading gold ore, and it must have had a trace of uranium in it. There must have been a leak in the canopy or a crack, and the breathe gas touched the uranium and exploded.
Uranium? Uranium?
You're pronouncing it wrong. It's uranium.
How do you say it in English?
That was enough.
How the crap nebula would I know?
Snapped Turl. Johnny carefully didn't smile. Uranium, uranium, he said to himself. It blew up breathe gas. And he had incidentally learned that Turl could not speak English.
Which controls are which?
Turl was mollified a trifle. At least the animal wasn't looking the other way.
This button stops it. Learn that button good, and if anything else goes wrong, push it. This bar turns it to the left, that one to the right. This lever lifts the front blade, that one tilts it, the next one angles it. The red button backs it up.
Johnny stood on the floor plate. He made the front blade lift, tilt, and angle, peering over the hood each time to see what was happening. Then he made the blade lift well up.
See that grove of trees over there? Start it toward them. Dead slow.
Turl walked beside the vehicle.
Now stop it.
Johnny did.
Now back it up.
Johnny did.
Now go forward in a circle.
Johnny did. Although Turl seemed to think this was a small vehicle, the seat was 15 feet off the ground. The blade was 20 feet wide. And when it started up, it shook not only itself, but the ground. Such was its heavy power.
Now, start pushing snow. Just a couple of inches off the top.
It was very difficult at first, getting the blade to bite in varying degrees while the machine rolled forward. Turl watched. It was cold. He had had no sleep. His fangs ached where Zit had landed a good one. He clambered up on the vehicle and took Johnny's rope and wrapped it around a roll bar, tying it at a distance where Johnny wouldn't be able to get to it. Johnny stopped the vehicle, ready for a breather.
Why didn't Numph hear me speaking?
Asked Johnny.
Shut up, animal.
But I have to know. Maybe my accent is too bad.
Your accent is awful, but that isn't the reason. You had a face mask on, and Numph is a bit deaf.
This was a plain, outright security chief lie. Numph had been able to hear all right, and the animal's face mask had not muffled his speech a bit. Numph had been distracted by something else, something Turl didn't know. And the reason Turl had had no sleep was that he had spent the entire night rummaging through dispatches, records, and Numph's files, trying to get to the bottom of it. Leverage. Leverage. That's what Turl needed. He had found nothing of importance, nothing at all. But there was something. Turl felt dead on his feet. He was going in to take a nap.
I have some reports to write. You just keep this thing going round and practice with it. I'll be out soon.
Turl took a button camera out of his pocket and stuck it on the after roll bar, out of the animal's reach.
Don't get any ideas. This vehicle only goes at a walk.
And he left. But the nap, aided by a heavy shot of Kerbango, was a bit longer than he intended, and it was nearly dark when he came lumbering hurriedly back. He stopped and stared. The practice field was all chewed up, but that wasn't the amazing thing. The animal had neatly knocked down half a dozen trees and pushed them all the way up the hill to the cage where they were now stacked. More, he had used the blade drop to slice up the trees into sections a few feet long and slit them. The animal was sitting on the seat now, hunkered down out of the keening wind that had sprung up. Turl untied the rope, and Johnny stood up.
What's that all about?
Said Turl, pointing at the chopped up trees.
Firewood,
said Johnny.
Now that I'm untied, I will carry some into the cage.
Firewood?
Let's say I'm tired of a diet of raw rat, my friend.
That night, having eaten his first cooked food in months, and thawing the winter chill from his bones before the pleasant fire on the cage floor, Johnny heaved a sigh of relief. The new clothes were hung up on sticks to dry. He sat cross-legged, digging into his pouch. He drew out the gold metal disc, and then he reached for the gold belt buckle he had just acquired. He studied them. The bird with the arrows was essentially the same on each one, and now he could read the squiggles. The disc said, "The United States of America." The belt buckle said, "The United States Air Force." So his people, long ago, had been a nation, and it had had a force of some sort devoted to the air. The Cyclos wore belt buckles that said they were members of the Intergalactic Mining Company. With a smile that would have frightened Turl had he seen it, Johnny supposed that he was, as of this minute, a member, the only member, of the United States Air Force. He put the buckle carefully under a piece of robe he used for a pillow and lay for a long time looking at the dancing flames.